Hi, my name is Grayson Gothard. I'm a junior at Reed. And I just want to say thanks for having us. And I'm sorry that there aren't more of us here. It's a really busy time, but everyone wishes they could be here with us all. So, I'm honored to be here again. And speaking of honor, Reed has this thing called the Honor Principle. The Honor Principle and Reed's concept of honor, Reed's concept of honor is almost impossible to define, but I'm going to do my best anyway. The main reason the honor principle is so difficult to define is because it's not codified. It's not written down, but a principle, not a policy. Honor doesn't have a fixed definition, but rather is something rooted in the Reed community, something that is constructed through our actions and discussions surrounding honor. It's something living, breathing, and constantly in question. This is what stood out to me most when visiting Reed as a high school senior. It reminded me of something I grew up with at church and youth camps, another living thing called a covenant. While they were inevitably written almost as a list of rules on poster paper at camp for all to see, these norms of behavior were created through community conversation. Covenants are often referred to as living documents because though the community agrees to behave with the principles of the covenant in mind, they are not truly explicitly defined rules and can be, or I say need to be, modified through discussion in order to ensure that the community feels safe and empowered. The honor principle is like a covenant in that way. And this is really the reason I decided to come to Reed. I felt some UU undertones in Reed's conception of honor, and for good reason, considering its founders included Thomas Lamb Elliott, the first minister of the First Unitarian Church of Portland. But there are also parallels between the honor principle and our own UU principles. And at least for me, acting honorably is inextricably linked to living my UU values. It sounds silly, but deep down I chose Reed College because it reminded me of my years in UU youth camps, a bunch of passionate people my age creating and sustaining a theoretically welcoming and supportive community based on shared values. Notice that I slipped theoretically in there. That's because no institution is perfect or succeeds in totally practicing what it preaches, so to speak. Much like the UUA, Reed College needs to address the systemic racism inherent in its procedures and individual interactions with people of color and other marginalized identity groups on campus. This is something I, a privileged white Southern California boy, had the luxury to not worry about or even consider when applying, but something that students of color at Reed and those applying to Reed that don't have that luxury. And this comes in many forms, from our only required class, a Eurocentric Humanities 110 course featuring few women or people of color, if any, to our operating bank, Wells Fargo, financial supporter of private prisons and ICE detention centers. In the fall of 2016, a group of organizers, later known as Reedies Against Racism, held a school-wide boycott of classes to draw attention to the still constant news regarding police killings of Black Americans. Professors canceled classes or modified the day to orient discussions around police brutality and racism. There was an open mic for students of color to express their experiences of living in a white, white city, in a white, white school. The end of the day's events consisted of a sit-in in the admissions office to demand, among other things, that Reed be declared a sanctuary school. Portland being a sanctuary city, this seemed like a logical and simple gesture to support undocumented students and students of color in the face of our then newly elected president. This sit-in, initially dismissed, as many protests are, as just a group of whiny, entitled young people who don't know what the real world is like, went on for almost 2 weeks. And in the end, the school announced its sanctuary status. And our lovely president, John Kroger, president for now, was touted as president of one of the first sanctuary schools of many across the country. with little credit given to the whiny youths who slept in the admissions office until this came to fruition. Other protest demands led to the creation of staff positions for students of color in the Multicultural Resource Center, moving up a review of that Eurocentric Humanities course, and the addition of a school anti-racism statement. An honorable protest with honorable goals and resulting in important steps in the right direction for the administration. And throughout the school year, there were continued silent protests in the humanities class. After all, it's supposed to be a humanities class and not a class on white Europeans, which is what it feels like today. And this past fall, the protests continued with much more pushback from the faculty and administration. Black students were threatened by administrators and faculty with police involvement for protesting at their own school. Yeah. But the lead organizers and protesters, including myself, lead organizers and other protesters, including myself, stuck to our values and feel that an important part of our education is to question whether our school is actually supporting marginalized students. Sorry. And we are not alone in recognizing the importance of questioning institutions of higher learning. In fact, that anti-racism statement adopted as a result of student protests actually calls us to do explicitly that. Quote, "We acknowledge the historical legacy of exclusion and marginalization in higher education. We affirm our responsibility to continuously learn about and disrupt systems of privilege, inequality, and oppression, and to reform our programs, policies, pedagogy, and practices in accordance with this responsibility." With the anti-racism statement in mind, Readies Against Racism began another sit-in, this time focusing on a demand from the previous year that had gone unaddressed for over a year. The fact that our operating bank is Wells Fargo. And I'm sure that you've heard in last year about their fraudulent accounts, which are definitely concerning. But our specific issue with Wells Fargo is their involvement with private prison companies like the Corps Corrections of America and the GEO Group and their funding of immigration detention centers. They also were a financial contributor to private security forces violently repressing water protectors protesting the Dakota Access Pipeline. Our protest demand was simple. We wanted to know whether or not it was possible to change to a more ethical operating bank, and if it was possible to do so as soon as possible. I wish I could say their response was simple as well, but pushback from the administration and emphasis that we needed to, quote, follow the standard procedure for this kind of thing, as opposed to having a sit-in, led to the sit-in lasting much longer than anticipated. We ended up occupying an administrative building on campus for over 50 days. And only after the semester ended did we receive the official announcement from the Board of Trustees that they would not consider any moral arguments against the bank itself. While we waited for communication from administrators and student protesters would go to classes and rotate in and out of the building, but in general there were some of us there the entire time, night and day. I flew back to Portland after Thanksgiving break and I didn't sleep in my bed until I came home for the winter break. I slept in the president's office for a while. It is really, really wild. And I'm only one of close to 60 dedicated students involved with the sit-in overall and implicated in any punishments that might come out of it. I can't even begin to describe the emotional, physical, and mental impact of the protests on everyone involved. But just know that it was not easy. But it was a way for us to engage with honor in a tangible way. To criticize Reed in order to improve it. Because we want the school to be the best that it can be. There's a sort of unofficial motto that gets tossed around at Reed that is to love Reed. And you can find it on bumper stickers and keychains in the bookstore. But you can also find it on a particular bathroom wall. It's my favorite piece of graffiti on campus. And it says, "Love Reed is a challenge." Yeah, no, yeah. And I absolutely agree. Loving anything is a challenge, and sometimes it involves criticism and risk. But both my Unitarian Universalist beliefs and the honor principle call me to take up this challenge of loving Reed, to modify the covenant we share, and to challenge Reed to love me and the rest of the community as well. So, thank you so much for giving me this time and space to reflect on my experiences, and I hope that you too can take up the challenge of loving the things that you care about and challenge your community to love you. Thank you.
My name's Lynette, and I'm a Reed graduate student and supporter of the UU Club, led by the amazing Grayson on the Reed campus. And first, before I start, I just want to double check time in someone who, so how many minutes do I have before we go to the next item on the order of service?
We're good on time.
Wait, is 10 minutes okay?
Oh, yeah,
okay.
15.
All right.
15.
Okay, so to kind of bounce off a couple things that Grayson was saying about the protest of Wells Fargo as Reed's operating bank, because Wells Fargo has financial ties to like the ICE things, and which brought to mind the action that I've been involved with along with the group Buddhists for Peace. And Buddhist Peace Community, and the Interfaith Movement for Immigrant Justice. I think I said their names right. On the second Thursday of every month, 12 noon at the ICE headquarters, we circle it with compassion to thaw ICE. And so everyone's invited. 12 noon, second Thursday of every month, and it's on the southwest waterfront. Get on the streetcar when it goes to make the turnaround. It's just like a block from there. There's no sign, but get off the streetcar and ask anyone, where's the ICE building? They all point. And we have an opening circle and a closing circle, and then we have the compassionate, silent meditation walk around and some chanting, because my spiritual practice is chanting Nam-myoho Renge Kyo, a Buddhist mantra. And I'm going to be reading a poem that I wrote, and it's in my novel, Lucy Plays Pan Pipes for Peace, that's fictionalized based on my experiences of following the sound of the pan pipes to Peru and Bolivia, seeking the ideal society of which they sing. And there I chewed the sacred coca leaf, played pan pipes with indigenous people in ceremonies and festivals, and encountered U.S.-supported human rights abuses that led to a life-or-death decision. So this poem that I'll be reading, The Coca Vendor, and as you know, the sacred coca leaf in the Andes has also, by white Europeans, been distilled into historically cocaine, and which is a drug, and the U.S. government has the war on drugs, and the Bush administration especially was, the plans to eradicate the coca leaf from Bolivia and Peru, and where. So this poem is my interaction, or the protagonist Lucy's interaction with a coca vendor in Bolivia. High in the Andes, Lena, the coca vendor, sits in her tiny market stall, like a regal matriarch, like a meditating Buddha, or a sentient landform. Aware, serene, at one with her surroundings. The hard wood plank bench padded with a folded hand-woven yihyai that once carried her nursing baby. The sky blue metal walls of her stand open out to display an overflowing cornucopia of coca. It is all an extension of her body, of her spirit, for here is her life, every day. She inhales the rust of the oxidizing stall, which reddens her blood, pulsing with every heartbeat, every exhale. Her coca-moistened breath chayas or blesses the environment. In, out, breath after breath, moment after moment, for days, weeks, years, decades, a lifetime, till there ceases to be a separation between the coca vendor and her coca stand. Naked light bulb dangles, illuminating her like a sacred relic, like an enshrined deity surrounded by offerings. But her offerings are to the people. Glistening green translucent bags of buoyant coca leaves, a bounty of sacred plant that connects the generations and the land. I approach. The coca vendor smiles, revealing a wad of coca leaves stored guinea pig-like in one cheek. A knowing twinkle dances in her ancient eyes as she adds a couple more handfuls of leaves to the 2-peso bag and snaps off a hunk of ashes. Coins exchange hands, molecules mingle, transformation occurs in the coca vendor stand in Oruro, Bolivia. And there's a illustration of a oil painting I did of the coca vendor.
Yeah.
And so these are those pan pipes that I followed the sound of. And I'll play a song that was written by an Aymara man, an indigenous Aymara man in Puno, Peru, who I was told his name and I didn't write it down, and poof, I don't remember, I'm so sad. And but like many songs, it's gotten picked up by other people and kind of changed, and its original was Paja Brava. I learned in a later incarnation is Carianta. But they're both names referring to an indigenous plant, a bunch grass in the Andes. And I'll be playing and singing in Spanish. And the lyrics are literally an indigenous person from the countryside expressing about the racism that's in the Andes. That they call me Carianta Black because I live in the countryside with a cold wind, and it's just, I can't maintain my greenness with just this harshness. And I interpret that as not just the literal coldness and the strong winds, but of society, of oppression. And so for me, it's a universal song of protesting all oppression everywhere, and also a celebration of that amazing spirit that each of us has. That's one, like one of the songs you're singing, you know, of, you know, one with all life. Carianta. Mime yaman karayanta. Negrita, porque vivo en el campo. A mí me llaman carayanta, negrita, porque vivo en el campo. Con el frío, con el viento, verde no más me mantengo. Con el frío, con el viento, verde no más me mantengo. Ay, 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 verde no más me mantengo. Ay, 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 verde no más me mantengo.